Woodrow Kroll here. When you train one pastor in Ecuador, some donor friends are standing by to train a second pastor.
Call 833-443-5467 or go online at trainapastor.com.
Every gift counts, and now every gift is doubled. Trainapastor.com.
Peter Rosenberger, he's not a preacher, but he's got great hair.
Welcome to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the nation's number one show for you as a family caregiver, and we are so glad that you are with us. Those of you who are pushing the wheelchair, staying up late at night, back and forth to the doctor's office, on the phone with insurance companies, on the phone with pharmacies, cleaning up stuff, back and forth to rehab centers, trying to hold down a job while you do it, ironing, cooking, grocery stores, everything, all that's involved in being a family caregiver, you're in the right place, and we're glad that you're with us. You want to be a part of the show, 877-655-6755. Certainly follow along at hopeforthecaregiver.com, and then we also stream the podcast out when we record it. We stream it out on Facebook Live at Hope for the Caregiver, and you're welcome to go out to our site there and join up, follow along. We have a Hope for the Caregiver group. So a lot of different ways to connect. We hope you'll take advantage of them. I want to start off today with something a little bit different. I've been thinking about these things a lot, and I wanted to talk about roll call. Roll call. And all too often, caregivers, we judge ourselves without mercy. Now think about how you look at yourself, how you visualize your role and what you're doing as a caregiver, how you're handling these things as a person, all those things involved. And think about how you're doing with that. And we judge ourselves so harshly over our job performance with a supremely critical eye. We berate ourselves while also allowing others to do the same. And if we choose to judge ourselves, I'm asking for at least, you know, a fair and objective viewpoint on this, let's judge ourselves on the whole. Now, for example, our attendance record. Our attendance record as a caregiver is perfect. We keep showing up. Now, yeah, we sometimes show up late, and we often feel battered and bruised. Sometimes we're swearing under our breath like Yosemite Sam did in all the Looney Tunes cartoons, but we still show up. Now, how would you feel about somebody who did that for you? What's that worth? Well, it's certainly worth taking a moment to acknowledge the extraordinary commitment and resolve of family caregivers, and that includes you. Listen to these lyrics from Bill Withers. Lean on me when you're not strong. I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm going to need somebody to lean on. So this is the human condition. And what we hope to do on this show is help fellow caregivers learn to just be a little kinder to themselves. So I'm asking you, here's the action step, and I'm asking you to consider this. When you're tempted to write a bad review, a scathing review, an employee evaluation of yourself on your job performance, when you're tempted to do that as a caregiver, would you at least first take a roll call and acknowledge who showed up? And that's you. And I'm glad that you do, and I'm glad that you've showed up here on this show. And with that, I'd like to introduce my co-host, my producer, my longtime guiding star to the ship that I sail on. You know him, you love him. He's the man who made the Kessel Run, and in 11 parsecs, he's John Butler, the Count of Mighty Disco.
John Butler, the Count of Mighty Disco, and he's so tall.
Never gets old, does it? That is that is just smooth as silk.
The Kessel Run in 11 parsecs.
11 parsecs, yes.
Not many people are going to get that.
Yeah. Well, and a parsec is a unit of distance, which the Lucas screwed that up, and then they had to
retcon it.
Yeah.
but we'll leave him with that. But
first off,
how
that aside,
how are you feeling?
Oh, I am feeling on time and very present. You can mark my attendance. You know,
roll call.
Roll call. I like that. No, that's a very it's a very important thing. You know, I too. Well, they're not young anymore. They're 9 and
yes,
13.
They are, John. Yes, they are. They're and you're young too, John.
Yes. Well, thank you. But
and he's so young.
So it's, I don't know about all that, but you know, I judge myself pretty harshly sometimes. In the parenting style of things, especially this past year, because they've been at home with me the entire time, but they've been at home with me the entire time and showed up for work. I know. And I'm not talking about my attendance. I'm talking about their attendance. They kept showing up every day despite having me floating around all the time. But no, it's very important to keep that sort of thing in mind. It's not to say that that's the bare minimum. That's saying that's more than the bare minimum. That's doing a really good job. And we need to acknowledge that, at least in those times, especially in those times when we're being overly harsh with ourselves. Because I stole this phrase from you. I steal a lot of phrases from you. But one of them that I really enjoy is, man, if anybody I hung around treated me like I treat me, I wouldn't hang around them anymore. You know.
Well, and I stole that too, because that is a very good statement to remind ourselves of as caregivers. And I think it bears repeating often on this show that we as caregivers on a core level do not struggle with anything that is not common to the human condition. We just struggle with it on a relentless and often nuclear, or as George Bush would say, nuclear level. And it becomes so overpoweringly intense, but the same core things are there: fear, obligation, guilt, heartache, anger, turmoil, which spells out fog hat, by the way, and but resentment, despair, all those things that are common to the human condition. And so when I say these things, we all will berate ourselves for our job performance. We all tend to look at ourselves with such a disproportionately critical eye. But when family caregivers get involved, they're just inundated with this so much, it becomes like a wall of sound at them. It is so big and it's overpowering. And so I thought, okay, how do we push back against that? And I thought, okay, we're going to judge ourselves. We can't stop doing it, but it's a part of our DNA. But let's also judge ourselves on our attendance. And that's a big part of it. What is it they say? What, 90% of success is just showing up?
Correct. And, yeah.
You know, and so we show up. And I hope that the lesson learned from this from fellow caregivers is let's have some balance in the way that we judge ourselves. I don't think we're going to stop. I mean, you tell me, John, if that's something you found.
No.
And people that you know have stopped judging themselves, but I haven't met anybody that doesn't judge themselves.
Well, and we do that because we care about the job and we want it done right. And we don't respect what we don't inspect. That's the other one, another one you like to use.
So we
inspect what, you know, our job performance. And just like everything else, can be relentless about it. That is a thing over which we feel we might have some control. And therefore, we're going to put some focus on that. And that's not to say this is something we should do. It's just something that we are going to do.
Yeah, this is standard operating procedure for human beings.
Yeah.
We're going to do it. but we also, it's very important for us, I have found in my own life, to understand how to separate some of these things out. We are going to do this. We are going to judge ourselves. We can't help it. We're going to self-critique, but we do it out of a sense of like my self-worth is tied up if I don't do this right. Self-worth is going to be impacted. It's going to have a negative impact on my self-worth. And so how do we go back and disconnect our self-worth from these tasks and realizing we're doing the best we can? And I think part of that is that we infuse better perspective. Okay. If you're going to tie your self-worth to how well you did this particular task, can we also attach self-worth to you showed up and start balancing that out a little bit, and what kind of person shows up, and that, what would you say to somebody who did this for you?
Yeah. And that's a kind way of looking at it. If I was going to look at it from, like, let's say, an accountant's point of view, as opposed to a kind point of view,
accountants are kind, John. I don't want any letters from accountants. They're kind people.
They would be very well written and precisely done. But going back to what we were talking about, we inspect all of the aspect, or we inspect the job performance that we do. We are judging our job performance. However, that is a little bit incomplete. Just like what you're saying, we need to, if we include all of the aspects that we should be judging, a prominent part of that should also be attendance, should be just showing up. So put that on the checklist when you're making that checklist of how did I do today, or how am I doing this month or year or whatever. And that should be visible to you.
Well, and I'd like for caregivers to really unpack the fact that, why is showing up important? What kind of person shows up for the things that you show up for as a caregiver? You know, and people say, well, I don't have any choice. Really? You really don't have any choice. And I would suggest to you that you do have a choice. You always have a choice. It may not be a very good choice. It may be a socially acceptable choice, but you are not, there's no gun to your head to this. This is something you're doing. Now you say, well, it's my kid. I'm supposed to. Well, yeah, but there are a lot of people that abandon children. There are a lot of people that abandon special needs children. There are a lot of people that abandon the elderly.
Yeah, it's well within your grasp to do this. It doesn't take a lot to get in the car and drive away. You know,
it doesn't mean that you're going to be loved and accepted by a lot of friends and family for doing so. But at the same time, understand that you are deciding this. You have agency in this, and that's very important. I want you to hold on to that, because nobody is forcing you at gunpoint in this. You're doing this out of a sense of who you are as a person, out of love, out of the character in your heart, and you're doing this because of love to this person. And yes, there are times when it gets so difficult and so demoralizing and so disheartening. I get it. But you keep showing up. And you say, well, they don't have anybody else. That's true. They may not. And they may not be able to survive without you. I get that. But please understand that you rob yourself of that sense of agency, of value, of saying, I am purposing to do this. Because the moment we start thinking we're obligated to do this, then resentment is not far behind. But I am purposing to do this. I am intentionally doing this. And that is worthy of you examining your heart and saying, well, why am I intentionally doing this? Why am I purposely doing this? And I know that we caregivers are so fractured mentally and frenetic in our behavior, but I felt very passionate about this particular topic today and getting into the monologue of this, of unpacking this for fellow caregivers so that they can see this. Take a moment. I know that you got a lot going on, but just take a moment to go deeper. Don't just live in the shallow end of the pool here, okay? Go a little bit deeper and start to understand yourself in this context. And this is what helps sort out some of that stuff that's in your heart. And I come from the longstanding belief that if a caregiver's heart is a train wreck, then imagine what the wallet's going to look like. Imagine what the relationship's going to look like. Imagine what the profession is going to look like, or what the house or what the body is going to look like. So let's start with the heart, and let's calm yours down just a little bit by recognizing you are doing something extraordinary. You're showing up. You're showing up to care for someone who is in desperate need, and you're offering what you have to do it, but you do it out of a sense of purpose and stewardship. When you do it out of obligation, it's going to take you down the dark path to resentment. Okay? That's part of the monologue with John, and I'm going to unpack that a little bit later. We got to go to a break. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver, a show that is committed to the concept that we as caregivers can live a calmer, healthier, and dare I say it, a more joyful life. We'll be right back. Hey, this is Peter Rosenberg, and in my 3.5 decades as a caregiver, I have spent my share of nights in a hospital, sleeping in waiting rooms, on fold-out cots, chairs, even the floor, sometimes on sofas, and a few times in the doghouse, but let's don't talk about that. As caregivers, we have to sleep at uncomfortable places, but we don't have to be miserable. We use pillows from MyPillow.com. These things are great. They have a patented interlocking feel that adjusts to your individual sleep needs, and for caregivers trying to sleep in all the different places we have to sleep, believe me, our needs get ramped up significantly. Think about how clean your pillows are. In the COVID world, we're all fanatical about clean. Can you wash your pillows? With my pillows from MyPillow.com, we throw them in the washer and dryer. We do it all the time. 10-year warranty, guaranteed not to go flat, 60-day money-back guarantee, made in the USA. As a caregiver, you need rest. So start by going to MyPillow.com, type in the promo code CAREGIVER. You get 50% off the 4-pack, which includes 2 premium pillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. You'll also receive a discount on anything else on the website when using your promo code CAREGIVER. That's MyPillow.com, promo code CAREGIVER.
You just call on me, brother.
Isn't that a great anthem for caregivers, John?
Oh man! And then some. It's a solid song to start with. You know,
it just, is. And,
well, we talked about different lyrics that are both good and bad for caregivers, and that's one that should be near the top of the list for good. That's a killer tune. And
well, Bill Withers hooked it, and it's inspired millions and millions and millions of people, and it continues to do so. It inspires me. And I love the bumper music that we get to have on the show because it's always reflective of what's going on with us as caregivers. And we do need somebody to lean on. I need somebody to lean on. You do. We all do. And the question is, who are we leaning on? Mm. And if we're leaning on people that are resenting us or whatever, then we need to rethink that and find those relationships that are important. And
if we happen to pick the wrong person to lean on, you know, we make them, as we say, drink from the fire hose, and they weren't able to handle it. That doesn't mean that they're bad or, you know, need to be cut out of our lives or whatever. You just right tool, right job sort of situation.
That was driven home to me this week. I've got a new book I'm working on. And I think I told you about this. My agent and I have been talking, and we've been pitching it to a couple different publishers. And one publisher that I didn't even know the publisher. I didn't know this one. I like to be accurate, even though I'm going to use anonymous sourcing. But I didn't know this person that well. But they looked at the proposal, and my agent got back to me, and he said they it doesn't fit with where they're going for this particular thing, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. Yeah. I've had rejection on many levels before.
I've got that line before too. Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're talking about for books though.
Yeah, but but this person added to my agent. We got to say we were a little unsettled by Peter's humor because of this subject.
Ah, okay.
And I laughed and I said, well, if they're unsettled by the because I know what I put in the proposal, and I said if they're unsettled by that, wait till they hear the joke about what I said to Gracie following her 80th surgery. You know, and it just drove the point home for me that I don't need that publisher with me. Okay.
Yeah, fine publisher, I'm sure, you know.
They're wonderful people. God love them. But they don't get what I'm about because I can tell you from my 35 years of experience that caregivers need to laugh. We must laugh. And for people to somehow think, well, it's too serious and that's like that whole concept of feeling pity for somebody, so we got to go help them because we feel sorry for them, as opposed to we're going to help them because it's soul enriching for both of us.
There you go.
We're going to stand with it. We're going to let them lean on me, and then I'm going to lean on them, and we're going to work together. This is a partnership. I'm not here because I feel sorry for my fellow caregivers. I don't feel this overwhelming sense of pity for my fellow caregivers. What I do feel is a great deal of passion to be able to take the things that I've learned, virtually every bit of it, the hard way, and offer it a way that make sense to them in a way that people have done for me over the years. And there's a wonderful verse in Corinthians that says, you comfort one another with the same comfort that you yourself have received from the God of all comfort. And so there is a, I'm nuancing a little bit, but I think it's an important nuance that, you know, that if we're doing these things out of a sense of pity,
Or like duty or obligation, you know?
Yeah. And it's going to, and it also devalues the other person, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you show me a caregiver that doesn't need to laugh. You know, I don't think that person exists. I know the journey. You don't laugh all the time. You don't have to laugh in the middle of, you know, a procedure. I mean, that's just goofy. But there is a point where you have that pressure valve release of laughter that lets you know I can still live life. And I think, when am I supposed to laugh? When Gracie gets better or when Gracie gets worse? Well, Gracie hasn't gotten better. And I've been married for 35 years. Do I postpone laughter until she says it's okay to laugh? I mean, when you start asking those kind of questions, it changes the conversation, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And then, like, yeah, so when's it okay? Yeah.
Yeah, when's it okay? And I think it's okay when it's funny, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's funny, and you've known Gracie for a long time, she's funny.
Oh, absolutely. I hear her in the background on the Bluetooth calls all the time.
Oh, God. Bless her heart, I can't get her to stop talking when I'm on the phone. You know, I'll call John and Gracie's just blah, 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 you know, and it's just like, Gracie, come, you know, please. But she's living life with every bit of gusto she has, and she is a woman who suffers greatly. And then, you know, I've got my cousin who's been on the show before, Meredith, and she's got a daughter with special needs who's got severe handicaps. And Meredith's one of the funniest people I know. And Meredith watched her father die of neurofibromatosis. This is my uncle. And it was a very painful, ugly death. And on his deathbed, he pulls me up close to him and he starts telling me jokes.
Yeah.
You know, and he wanted me, he helped plan out his funeral. He knew it was coming. He told me what he wanted me to do. He wanted me to play a love song that was his song with my aunt. And I played it at the funeral. But then he starts telling these jokes, and they're off-color jokes. They're not family appropriate. And they were hilarious, and he was hilarious. And I thought, this publisher, I didn't go back because it was coming, being filtered to me through my agent, but I didn't go back.
Sure.
And try to correct them. I just think, I'm just grateful that, okay, they don't get it, and that no is a very good yes for me.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, you have given me the information I needed to make this decision. That is exactly what I needed. Thank you.
I am not worried about where if this book will get published, because it will get published. I have no doubt about that. This will be my fourth book, and I'll get it published. I've got the track record and so forth. And I know, more importantly, I know the audience. I know the people.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, if I have to publish it myself under John Butler, Count of Mighty Disco Publishing, I'll do it that way.
There you go. All right. I'll get the Xerox machine up and running.
But do we even use Xerox machines anymore?
I have no idea.
But if anybody tells me that it's not okay to help caregivers laugh, that person does not need to be in my life. Or at least they need to be, that's a little harsh. I'm sorry. That person needs to be on the outer rim of the galaxy of my life.
Well, and just that there is there are conversations you won't have with them, you know, it's just because it will be counterproductive for both of you.
It would be. And they'll figure it out eventually. I mean, if you're a caregiver and we're all going to either be a caregiver or need a caregiver. And if you're a caregiver for any length of time, you'll figure out eventually that it's okay to laugh. It's okay to sing. It's okay to cut up. It's okay. Ecclesiastes says it. For every season, there's a time for laughter. There's a time, the birds sing that.
Yeah, that's correct.
Turn. But there's a time to laugh and a time to cry. And a time for mourning, a time for dancing. And this is our journey as caregivers, is to understand that we don't have to wait for our loved one to get better or worse before we live life in the midst of this. This is life. And sometimes life for Gracie and me is in the hospital room. Sometimes it's her struggling with pain. Sometimes it's us watching a funny movie. It's just life. So Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberg.
This is John Butler, and I produce Hope for the Caregiver with Peter Rosenberger. Some of you know the remarkable story of Peter's wife, Gracie. And recently, Peter talked to Gracie about all the wonderful things that have emerged from her difficult journey. Take a listen.
Gracie, when you envisioned doing a prosthetic limb outreach, did you ever think that inmates would help you do that?
Not in a million years.
When you go to the facility run by CoreCivic and you see the faces of these inmates that are working on prosthetic limbs that you have helped collect from all over the country that you put out the plea for, and they're disassembling. You see all these legs, like what you have, your own prosthetic
and
legs.
And arms, too.
And arms.
Everything.
When you see all this, what does that do to you?
Makes me cry. Because I see the smiles on their faces, and I know what it is to be locked someplace where you can't get out without somebody else allowing you to get out. Of course, being in the hospital so much and so long. And so these men are so glad that they get to be doing, as one man said, something good finally with my hands.
Did you know before you became an amputee that parts of prosthetic limbs could be recycled?
No, I had no idea. You know, I thought of peg leg. I thought of wooden legs. I never thought of titanium and carbon legs and flex feet and sea legs and all that. I never thought about that.
As you watch these inmates participate in something like this, knowing that they're helping other people now walk, they're providing the means for these supplies to get over there, what does that do to you just on a heart level?
I wish I could explain to the world what I see in there. And I wish that I could be able to go and say, this guy right here, he needs to go to Africa with us. I never not feel that way. Every time, you know, you always make me have to leave. I don't want to leave them. I feel like I'm at home with them. And I feel like that we have a common bond that I would have never expected that only God could put together.
Now that you've had an experience with it, what do you think of the faith-based programs that CoreCivic offers?
I think they're just absolutely awesome. And I think every prison out there should have faith-based programs like this, because the return rate of the men that are involved in this particular faith-based program and the other ones like it, but I know about this one, is just an amazingly low rate compared to those who don't have them. And I think that says so much. That doesn't have anything to do with me. It just has something to do with God using somebody broken to help other broken people.
If people want to donate a used prosthetic limb, whether from a loved one who passed away or, you know, somebody who outgrew them, you've donated some of your own for them to do. How do they do that? Where do they find it?
Please go to standingwithhope.com/recycle. standingwithhope.com/recycle.
Thanks, Gracie.